Good evening and welcome, everyone. As we celebrate the life of Ruth Coffey, Ruth Elizabeth DeBryan was born in 1927 in Grand Rapids, Michigan, to parents of Dutch and Danish descent. She met her husband, George Calden, at the University of Michigan, and they moved to Madison in 1949, where he worked for many years as a clinical psychologist. They were very happily married for 58 years until his death in 2007, and they shared many interests, including a deep love of music. Ruth was a devoted mother to their four children, Lisa, Martha, Ginny, and Tom, all of whom are here today. Ruth had a broad circle of friends and an exceptionally rich life. She pursued her many passions with energy and inquisitiveness. We hope to touch on just a few of these aspects of Ruth's life this evening as we pay tribute by reminiscing together. We would like to extend a special welcome to Ruth's brother, Jack. Jack DeBryan and his wife, Joan, who traveled here from Fort Mill, South Carolina, along with their daughters, Karen Brown, also from South Carolina, and Kristen DeBryan and her husband, Roberto Cruz, from New York. You will hear from her family and several friends, and there will be live music from friends of Ruth. And then toward the end of the service, we'll have some time for a few brief reminiscences from those of you who are gathered here together. We also hope you will join us for an informal dinner after the service to continue celebrating Ruth's life. Now we'll hear a poem written by Ruth called The Tide of Spring. Listen as the poem is read by her son, Tom Calden.
Thank you for everyone for coming out tonight. My mom, she loved nature, and she especially loved the spring. And early April, she would always make it a point to go to the UW Arboretum to see the early spring perennials like bloodroot and Dutchman's breeches, hepatica, and she would refer to them as the little darlings. So, and she wrote this poem, which was, it was published in a publication. I don't know the name of the publication, but she was very proud of it, and I think it represents her. It's called The Tide of Green. Every spring, Earth tilts down towards the sun, and waxing light unleashes a tide of green, celadon, jade, and emerald, displacing by kaleidoscopic shift winter's grays and sepias. Rising from the Everglades, the tide of green surges north, drawn by the sun at 50 miles a day, steadily engulfing a continent, seeping into Wisconsin in April, when I stoop to poke dead leaves aside and spy the rich green lobes of hepatica. Triumphant here in May, the tide invades each dormant cell of fern and shrub, of grass and tree, inundating every blade and leaf, staining hills and valleys green. I stand helpless beneath the hickory buds, a witness to the tidal wave of spring.
Please stand as we sing one of Ruth's favorite hymns. for the beauty of the earth,
accompanied by Carlos Moser.
Share memories of Ruth. I'm Ginny. I'm Ruth's third daughter. And what stands out most to me about my mom is how she savored the beautiful, the exquisite, how she so actively sought it out. She aspired to live full-time in this sensate world. Mom got a real lift from the simple things, cheerful, vibrant colors, especially oranges and golds. She could just melt over the song of a Jenny Wren or the wistful moan of an oboe, the full-blown resonance of cello. Being greeted by a beloved family cat, she relished the taste of pesto pasta from the garden and the tang of freshly squeezed lemon, the scent of lilacs, a clear cerulean sky. Mom taught me to give massage at 4 years old and actually paid me a penny a minute. It was good money at that age, so I worked hard at it. Then she would proclaim after 15 or 20 minutes, "Wow, what stamina you have," which of course further encouraged me. When people ask me now how long I've been practicing massage, I like to say, since I was four. The truth. I'll always remember during our many trips together to Chicago Art Institute, we'd take the long, arduous walk through the Renaissance galleries, absorbing the deep, velvety tones and textures that described often jarringly vivid scenes of slaughtered animals and St. John's head on a plate. How afterwards, we bathed ourselves in the dreamy, soft golds and blues of the Impressionist paintings that followed. That was heaven, our sweet reward for all that we had endured. Perhaps her favorite sensation was the fine white sand and how it felt between her toes, the wash of blue waves and the indistinct horizon, Lake Michigan rolling in towards her, not a care in the world. And then she'd turn to me and take a breath of the soft lake air and just exclaim, "Ah," she was so my mom. Once home, she liked nothing more than to sit out on the back deck and watch the chipmunks, her little chippies, scurrying about amongst the dancing leaves, the glass of sun-brewed iced tea. If beauty was involved, she never hesitated to stop, take it in, and just be. Growing up, she was emphatic that we kids grew up cultured and well-rounded. We had the privilege of ballet lessons, which I adored, and piano lessons, which I hated. I just wanted to be able to play a real song. And she would, when I would protest, she would shout from the other room, "You'll thank me when you're 18." Which I didn't believe her, and then at 18, I still wasn't thanking her, but eventually I did, very much so, so thank you, Mom, for that. She instilled clear values at a very young age. As young kids, we attended Bethany Methodist Church, and Mom was actually my Sunday school teacher for both first and third grade. She never taught us about some big old bearded man judging us in the sky, or whether or not we're going to heaven and hell. What we did get from Mom was to love one another, be gentle and respectful to all the other little creatures that inhabit the earth, and do unto others as we would want them to do unto us. One of my fondest memories of Mom was when I was probably 6 or 7 years old, and I was home alone for some reason, maybe had a sore throat, and no other siblings there. And she packed a real picnic basket with 2 peanut butter sandwiches, some sliced apples, and green grapes, and we walked out to the back of the yard where there were several trees kind of together that created a little cozy hideaway. And we used tree stumps for chairs. And it was just me and her and the pine boughs under a perfectly blue sky. And that was what it felt like to be with my mom. And I have to mention that Mom made the best salads. And literally, I don't think we ever had a meal without one. Or lemonade, for that fact. Growing up, while other people ate standard dinner rolls and milk with their meals, we were savoring crisp salads and lemonade while we listened to the CBS Nightly News. And to this day, when I hear Walter Cronkite's voice, I start to salivate for lemonade and Italian wishbone dressing. We had traditional family dinners on Sundays, which continued on until Mom's very last week with us. The last couple of years, I did most of the hosting, which I love to do. She was so easy and fun to please, and she passed down to me the love of cooking and the need to feed. There was never a lull in dinner conversation if Mom was there. She always had a multiple outings to report from the previous week. Her time at the symphony, the opera in the park, how she line danced at the convention center at Dean Dances. The latest book she was reading, she took a trip to out-of-town trip for an historical tour, and she always had a newspaper clipping with an interesting article or a recipe just for me. And she was so enthusiastic about my activities and accomplishments, even a new dress bought from St. Vinny's. Mom's love and influence lives on in so many ways for each of us, and on our 50th birthday for each of us, she put together a photo album of our lives from birth on until young adulthood, and we each have one of these, which I, of course, cherish very much, especially now. So Mom will forever live on through my eyes and my ears, my taste and smell and touch, and first and foremost, forever in my heart.
So I'm Lisa, the oldest of Ruth and George's children, and I wanted to thank you all for coming here to help share memories of our mother, Ruth. So, as Ginny already eloquently described, Ruth was one of the most important formative influences in our lives growing up, if not the most. She instilled core values in all of us, values which were Christian in the broadest and best sense of the world. She also impressed on me the importance of pursuing what used to be called a liberal education, not so much to prepare myself for a career, for better or for worse, but with the goal of becoming a well-rounded person and a responsible member of the community. Ruth's passions for art, nature, reading, travel, and other cultures had a strong impact on me. I wound up getting degrees in French and art history, I think in no small degree due to her influence. I remember seeing a book of Botticelli illustrations on our coffee table when I was a teenager, which I remember being the first images of paintings that I really responded to. I also have a memory of going with her to the Metropolitan Museum in New York as a young child and, full disclosure, being bored to tears at the time in a room full of Byzantine and early Italian Renaissance paintings. But years later, I came to love art of that period and many others. One of my fondest memories of Mom was when she and George came to visit me at the end of my junior year abroad in Aix-en-Provence, France, which is a program that the UW had and I think still has there. They both came over at the end of the year and we spent several happy weeks traveling north to Paris, stopping along the way to see all of the Gothic and Romanesque churches that I had studied and the chateaus of the Loire Valley. And that was followed by a week in England, in London, the Cotswolds, and Cornwall. It was truly a magical trip that I'll always remember. Another happy memory I have from childhood was of spending a week or two in the summers at a ramshackle collection of cottages in Michigan that was called Wandawood. And it was what was euphemistically called a resort. But it was very rustic. Wandawood was discovered by Ruth's closest friend in college, Jackie Greenhut, and our two families got together there over the summer for many years. Ruth and Jackie shared a great passion for the beaches of Lake Michigan, which they passed on to all of us. So Wandawood was on an inland lake, but it also had a private beachfront on Lake Michigan, just a quarter mile away. So we'd go swimming or paddleboarding in Elk Lake in the morning, and then we take a picnic lunch and sun on the Lake Michigan side in the afternoon. And I remember amazingly beautiful sunsets over Lake Michigan. We also really enjoyed driving around exploring the countryside and the small towns in the area, including Petoskey, which is home of the supposedly famous Petoskey Stones, at least we thought so, the Leelanau Peninsula, and above all, the wonderful Sleeping Bear Dunes. About 10 years ago, Ruth and I were reminiscing about Wandawood, and she and I decided to go back there again, just the two of us, for two summers in a row, along with her old friend Jackie. We had a really wonderful time there, but sadly, Jackie had started to develop Alzheimer's, so we were unable to continue the tradition but past a certain point. Another thing that really stands out in my memories of Ruth was her love of traditions, especially at holidays. She always had to have a full-size live tree at Christmas, even into her 90s, despite the difficulties of getting it home and up the stairs. She had hundreds of unusual ornaments, many that were collected during her travels around the world, or that were gifts from friends and family, and she always really enjoyed unpacking them and covering every inch of the tree with them. I remember one time, quite a few years ago, when she and I decided to go to Christmas Tree Farm and cut down our own tree. It was freezing cold, and after we finally picked out a promising specimen, we started sawing away at his base. So each of us was lying on the ground on opposite sides, and we were doing a really bad job of it. And the saw blade was going down into the ground, and it really wasn't working. So after getting more and more frustrated, we suddenly looked at each other and started laughing uncontrollably. So we then had to go sheepishly get help, but we did eventually come home with the tree. Ruth provided a very warm and loving home for all of us children. Whenever I came home on my biannual visits to Madison once I'd moved to Berkeley, she would always swoop down the stairs to greet me with great enthusiasm. She had an unflaggingly optimistic and cheerful spirit, especially in her later years, and a profound sense of wonder and delight in the natural world, all of which I always found quite wonderful. She was always our biggest cheerleader in whatever we pursued. We all miss her terribly, but I am deeply grateful that Ruth had such a long, full life and that she was a part of our lives for so long. Thank you.
I'm Jack DeBryan, Ruth's brother. It is my distinct honor to share with you some of my fond memories of my dear sister, Ruth. Ruth was my big sister my whole life. She was 9 years my senior. I can't remember a time, either as a child or as an adult, that she didn't welcome me into her life. There are so many things to share, but I am sure that all of you sitting out there in the audience have your own list of good memories of Ruth. The first thing that comes to mind to me, however, is her love for music. As a small boy, she introduced me to classical music, and I have been a diehard nut about the classics ever since. We listened to music together as when I was a child, at all stages of my growing up, and even when we were both elderly. When I visited Madison, Ruth was sure to take me to a local concert of some sort. How that love of music has enriched my life, I can't adequately express my gratitude for her inspiration and enthusiasm. Ruth and I also shared a love of birds. When I visited her in Florida or even here in Madison, we often took to a canoe to spot water birds together. She was a finer birder than me. I recall that on one occasion she got up very early one morning to go to a specific location to watch the mating of the prairie chicken. That was my sister Ruth. When Ruth and George visited Florida one time to visit our mother and elderly aunt and uncle, who were all living in a retirement community, Ruth and George made a recording of an interview they had with my mother, Aunt Anna, and Uncle Henry. As Ruth and I became older, we listened with great joy to the recorded stories of the three of them every time we were together. It was just like they were in the room. Such a gift it was for me to reminisce with Ruth. Maybe the most wonderful thing about Ruth was her kindness and gentleness. A more kind and gentle person I have never known. I am sure all of you listening to me will agree. You couldn't be with Ruth without noticing how kind and gentle she was. I love you, Ruthie, and I miss you terribly.
Jack chose this wonderful song by Schubert about peace and love. Du bist die Ruhe.
Thank you.
Now we invite three of Ruth's friends, Rose Link, Mary Mullen, and Rosemary Dorney, to come up and share a few stories about Ruth. Three of you can come up at once.
Ginny asked me to say a few words in memory of Ruth. Ruth was so many things to so many people. Ruth's legacy would be difficult to summarize. My comments will be about our Wednesday afternoon book club of 60 years. In May of 1964, Madison Psychiatric Associates invited my husband Rudolph to become a partner in MPA, where Ruth's husband George was an associate. And it was through this connection that Ruth and I became friends. In September of that year, Ruth invited me to join the Wednesday Afternoon Book Club, a neighborhood club that Ruth had organized. And thus began our 60 long years. Our club later renamed itself the Yaya Sisterhood. Over the years, members joined and departed. Jane Tigring, Audrey Giles, Doris Belknap, Eloise Beatty, Betsy Roberts, Sidney Mannering, Paula Elkman, Ione Hatfield, Dagmar Krause, more recently Eleanor Lux, Mary Cordell, Rosemary Lester, Margaret Koop, Judy Lazarus, and I must also mention Rose Smith. Today, we jointly mourn the death of Audrey Giles, Mary Cordell, Rosemary Lester, and the woman who created the club, Ruth. Ruth was our constant, our catalyst, our organizer, our communications chairwoman. We met every Wednesday afternoon in one or another's home. And weekly, Ruth emailed time, place, and person, name of hostess for the week, a number of pages of current book to be read. Ruth kept copious notes of her weekly reading with which she skillfully guided vigorous, sometimes contentious, passage discussions, always maintaining order by bringing us back to topic. Ruth loved to learn, a wondrous, wise woman, kind and generous to a fault, a friend to all who knew and loved her. At times, Ruth would recall memories of songs learned as a girl growing up in Michigan. And one memory stands out above all others. And as a group, we would sing along with her. This little light of mine, I'm gonna make it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna make it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to make it shine, make it shine, make it shine, make it shine. Thank you.
Well, I'm Mary Mullen. I'm a Prairie member, Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society, where Ruth went to church all the time I did. I joined in 1983. She was also a friend and a colleague in writing the Prairie History book that I'll tell you a little bit more about. That's mostly what I'm going to talk about. I first got to know Ruth in 1983 when I came to Prairie one day and there was a road construction project redoing Verona Road, which of course now they're doing many years later. And there was a tree there, a great big cottonwood tree. And it was probably already 75 or 100 years old then, and I wanted it saved, and so did others in the neighborhood. And I came to the church, and Ruth got a letter together and got probably 50 people at Prairie to sign it, and that tree was saved until 2014 when they started the new project. It was by the mobile station on Verona Road. So she gave it 33 more years of life. And I really appreciated that. So what I'm really here to tell you about is the immense service for Prairie that Ruth did by helping create the history book set. It's a project that occupied the last five years of her life. And you better believe I was scared to death that one of the four of us or some of us might not live to see it done. And I think the project gave a lot of meaning to Ruth's life. She felt it was her legacy to Prairie and also to her family. And it is a legacy. It's 968 pages. It's in two volumes. I brought the book here, so if anyone wants to see it, they may. Her contributions were 36 articles, most of them written over the 4 years that we were working on the book. A couple of them were interviews from back in the 70s. And they were all really well-written and interesting. And she also provided 50 of the photos in the book. I want to tell you what it meant to be on the History Committee. We met 95 times over that four and a quarter years. And sometimes we met for 3 hours at each of those meetings. That was common. And first we met monthly, and then we found out we weren't getting enough done because we would just wait, you know, till the week before, and then we'd start working on our assignments. So then we went to bi-weekly so we could get more done. And then when we were afraid we weren't going to get it done at all, we went to meeting weekly, and that really made us work a lot harder. And let me tell you that Ruth was the one who got all of her assignments in on time, even though she was the oldest one of us. The rest of us, you know, sometimes procrastinated or forgot. And this was amazing, since she was 88 when she started this and 92 when we finished. And during this time, she started to have eye problems. Things looked real wavy, she said, like a film that was wavy. And so, of course, she went to the doctor, and she had to get injections into her eye for this. I don't know how anyone could stand it, but Ruth managed to deal with it. And she coped by starting a group for people with low vision and problems like that. So she added to her already busy schedule, you know, which was bi-weekly meetings of this history committee, exercise, her book group, with us weekly concerts. She was on the Prairie Choir. She came to church every Sunday. And so she was a busy person right up to the last week of her life after she suffered that stroke than she wasn't. I have a friend who's Finnish, and she gave me a Finnish word that describes what Ruth was and what we all were on that committee at the end when we thought we would never finish it. And the word is sisu. And it means having grit and guts and spunk and tenacity and perseverance and persistence and inner strength. And Ruth definitely showed all that. And she still had a very sweet temperament and showed hospitality. Let me tell you some of the assignments she did. One of the things we did is we came right up here to First Unitarian, and we went down in the basement that I didn't even know existed, where the First Unitarian archives are. And we sat there and took notes about the beginning of Prairie. She cataloged all her papers and then the papers of other members that older members who had turned their archives over to us. She did interviewing that was recorded, and Bob Park helped record those. She and I took a field trip to photograph all the places that Prairie had met, and that was four others besides the place that we meet now, or I mean that where our building is. We're not meeting there now because we're remodeling again. If we needed phone calls made, Ruth would make them, you know, to get permission to use photographs or to let people know, to find out people that would be able to tell us more things and so on. And then in the last year or so, we met at her home all the time, and she would always provide tea and snacks. So I'm going to finish now. All I can say in summary is that Ruth really did Prairie and herself and her family more than proud. And we can only hope that someone will be able to follow in her footsteps. And of course, I miss her as a friend. She was my seatmate in the choir among the altos. I really miss her there. And as one of the people that I worked so closely with over the 4 1/4 years of this history project. Thank you. Hi, it's lovely having an audience where I know about 2/3 of the people. They've heard me before, and when I make goose, they are very kind. I've noticed that I love chairs with arms as I get older, and these seats definitely don't have them. I guess I'm going to elaborate, Jack, if you don't mind, on music and Ruth, because I live here. And we went to so many things together. Sometimes we went with you, I know. And you're right. Ruth searched for things that would be something you would like when you came and visited. It's a long distance. She traveled to meet with you, what, just 2 years ago? Something like that. My gosh, I ignore planes these days. Ruth was special, though. And music was big, very, very big. When we were in Grand Rapids for Pat Watkins' last trip, Ruth showed me the church that she'd grown up in. It was down at the end of a big street. And she said her father had sung in the choir there, and then she. But her real progress musically was when she was in college and met George. And George introduced her to things like string quartets. And I promised I wouldn't mention the Schubert that brought them together, so I won't. It was, you know, gosh. When you're terribly in love with someone and you're terribly in love with music, sometimes it's hard to sort it out. But George is gone and Ruth has been involved in music all her life. And example, this spring we went to hear the Medicine Bach musicians, charmed by Trevor Stevenson's incomparable pre-concert talks, and we went to the Willie Street Chamber Players this summer, up to Spring Green to Bach Dancing and Dynamite. We were scheduled to go to Token Creek the week she died, and I was sitting there holding the tickets and thinking, what am I going to do? I was lucky. One of our kids who grew up in the Prairie family went with me. She's a cellist and musical. But it was hard. It was hard. I was thinking of Ruth all the time. She was, she loved getting a recording that she particularly had been searching for. And the phone would ring, and it would be Ruth. And she would say, I got it. I got that recording of the Trout that I've been trying to get for years. It's from 1952, and George and I just loved it. She said, can you come over for tea now? And of course I did. And we sat there. I think all of you, if you've been with Ruth in one of the experiences where she felt very absorbed and very exalted, know how she would sit with her head tilted a little slightly and sort of half smile, and sometimes she'd raise one eyebrow just a little bit or maybe roll her eyes, but you always knew, and we each knew that the other knew, that we were sharing a sublime musical moment. I think Rosalie mentioned how Ruth got started into projects and things like that, and Mary mentioned the group of the people who had eye problems. Well, Ruth got interested in Peruvian music, and she played the recorder, and the Peruvian version was an Incan version, actually, was a cana, and she went and learned how to use the cana, and then she found out that Enrique Rueda makes canas and for individual people, and by gosh, she got to know him, and she got her very own cana. You know, how many people go from
one thing to another like that and just follow it all the way through. That's Ruth. Oh, the mind boggles. Ruth was involved in so many other musical groups, primarily the Ethnic Connection, which changed its name over time. And I see that someone from way back is here today. We haven't seen her for a while. Lee? Yeah, it is Lee. That's why I thought. They reached a mind-boggling total of over 500, what do you call them, gigs, I guess. It sounded funny hearing gigs from Ruth, I guess. But because she was, in many ways, she was formal, which I am not. And sort of amazing, we were very dear friends for, 50-plus years. But like Mary, we worked on the book together, and that was a very binding experience. You know, you're either going to hate one another or become buddies, because there was not a whole lot of alternative. And I'm very grateful that she lived to see it done, because it was so much work. It was she who gave us the beginning. She was the only one of the four of us that she'd been around, that had been around when Perry started, and emanated out of this First Unitarian. And she knew that stuff, and we did not know that stuff. And she wrote it up, and she wrote it up beautifully. And we would not have had it without her. Oh, I would like to have been Ruth and George's children, in a way, and had the kind of upbringing they had, music and the things of the world, being taken to the... I did go to the Art Institute. Virginia, I lived in Chicago, so I did get to do that. And the lion's out in front. Ruth, know that in my heart I'm sitting with you today, both of us totally wrapped in a string quartet, Schubert probably, and absorbed, and we couldn't be happier.
El Día de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. So Orange is now going to share her remembrance.
And this microphone is on. I wanted to thank Ginny for sharing these remembrances so that I can bring them to you today. It was during a trip to Mexico in 1995 that Ruth experienced firsthand the lavish, colorful, and joyous Day of the Dead celebrations. Ruth felt moved by how people embraced their dead loved ones by sharing happy reminiscences, food, and offerings. Whole families came together with other families in the cemeteries to celebrate and honor the lives of their deceased. What a sharp contrast to how we deal with mourning here, where death is so neatly tucked away and people often tend to feel very alone in their grief. Ruth decided to embrace the Mexican tradition by bringing the Day of the Dead ritual to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society each year on a Sunday close to All Souls Day on November 1st. During the service, members of the congregation are invited to come up, share a picture or other memento, and say a few words about a deceased loved one before lighting a candle. Ruth delighted in making an altar complete with decorated sugar skulls, Mexican papel picado, traditional celebratory flags made of perforated tissue paper, and pan de muerte bread from a local Mexican bakery. And you can see behind me that the family has created a beautiful example of a Day of the Dead altar. We know that Ruth would want the Day of the Dead tradition at Prairie to continue long after her passing. And in her honor, we'd like to invite those of you today who would like to share a reminiscence to come up and say a few words here at this podium. Please use the microphone so that everyone can hear you. And after you are done, take a candle, light it from the flaming chalice, and place it in the sand behind me. Please make your reminiscences brief so that others will have time to share as well.
We're all here with love in our hearts that was planted by Ruth. And while I was sitting listening to this beautiful service that gives so much tribute to her, I just jotted down a few things so I would remember. And the words that come forth are love, joy, goodness, and righteousness, including political righteousness, by the way. And it's really the embrace of all people. And that's what she worked for. More than embrace, it was activity as part of the embrace and banishing intolerance. She did so with more love and, of course, with music, with her beloved husband and the rest of the quartet, Nodi and Lee, in the ethnic connection that reached out to all people while embracing all people and all ethnicities, which is why they were the ethnic connection. I was lucky that while I was working at Jewish Social Services as the director of aging and other services, she and the group brought music to us, which was a way of adding to the love and the joy. They regularly performed at a group called L'Chaim to Life. And she then became a part of L'Chaim, enjoying an important part of just being, of sitting together with friends and enjoying lunch together. And that's what Ruth is about, sharing love. And that's what we're about today. Thank you for sharing that with all of us.
And creating light. I'm Yoram Shanker, and for 33 years, myself and my family have had an incredible privilege to be Ruth's next door neighbors. Not only privilege, but joy and real enjoyment of having such wonderful neighbors, including George, too. And I could talk about Ruth for hours, but if I would have to summarize how I could summarize Ruth in few words, what comes to me is from Hebrew Bible, in Book of Mishle, what we call in Hebrew, I think in English it would be Book of Proverbs. There is a passage about Eshet Chayil, woman of valor. And many of you know your Bible, so you probably know about this. And for me, maybe the most striking was what Francie was referring to, is the love of human beings. Our children grew up in Wisconsin, being removed thousands of miles from their grandparents, and Ruth and George served in loco grandparentes. I particularly remember the Halloween is coming, and Ruth used to carve the pumpkin with them. It's just a source of sadness for me. Our children are big now, they are far away, and Ruth is not around to carve the pumpkin. We were not here when the cruel stroke, when she succumbed to the cruel stroke, and we were dumbstruck when Tom came to tell us that she's in the hospital, and it's my hospital, University Hospital. I visited her several times. At least I had the solace that she was not suffering. But I don't want to remember Ruth in her bed in the hospital. What I want to remember is my last interaction with her. We were leaving for Chicago. And as always, I brought a bag of garbage because, you know, we have a garbage day on Friday. We were leaving on Wednesday or something like this. And Ruth always graciously accepted our garbage to add it to her collection. And she asked me, "You are coming back on Friday. Will you be back early enough to go with me to the Latino dancing on the top of Monona Terrace?" So that's how I want to remember Rose, her incredible vitality, and to remember her dancing, and I've seen her dancing on top of Monona Terrace, the Latino dancing. So as we say in Hebrew, Tanuchi al Mishtavech b'Shalom, rest in peace, Ruth.
Hello, my name is Alia. My beloved grandmother knew Ludmila Shapiro, was a good friend of Ruth since I was a teenager. One of the most precious legacies Lou left me with was Ruth's friendship, and I have tried to express Ruth's immeasurable value to me by writing a letter addressed to her. And please forgive me if it's on the long side. I really tried to cut it down. I'll try to talk fast. Dear, sweet, lovely Ruth, we last spoke just a few days before your stroke about our plan to go to Dane dances, as we did every year. It always tickled me pink to think how surprised the people dancing around us would be if they knew your true age. You didn't like to be stereotyped, so I avoided the topic, but sometimes I would whisper conspiratorially to acquaintances, "Can you believe that Ruth is 92? Or whatever age you happened to be at the time, relishing their invariable amazement. You had recently revealed to me the stunning fact that you didn't dye your hair. Truth is, physically and spiritually, you were the closest to ageless of anyone I have ever met. I cherish the years I was fortunate to have you in my life. As the crowd here today attests, you were so popular and well-loved, a model for maintaining relationships with people. As the kids today might say, you were a queen. I was honored that you considered Maya and me like family and attended Maya's ice shows and musical performances, even had her sleep over. Not only a surrogate grandma, you were my best friend for the better part of the last decade. We could talk about almost anything, over tea, of course. My attachment worried Maya. How can your best friend be in her 90s, implying what would come of me when you died? That I haven't completely fallen apart since your death is thanks to your example, Ruth. The way you lived so fully and graciously, not succumbing to self-pity or bitterness, good-naturedly and matter-of-factly weathering life's challenges. A consequence of your long life was that you survived many loved ones and contemporaries. You talked about how hard it was to see the mental deterioration of peers. I will never forget how you invariably rose to the occasion in continuing to write and call people, to pay visits to them in institutions, to honor them at funerals, even when to do so was depressing, inconvenient, or a stark reminder of your own mortality. You were unfailingly considerate and polite and patient. You set the bar so high, Ruth. For the rest of my life, I will be asking, what would Ruth do to try to make the right choices? And if the moment calls for it, to get off my duff or stop wallowing. Elegant and beautiful, you were the consummate role model, living with balance, integrity, and self-control, being organized, hardworking, seeing projects to fruition, as the speakers have talked about, raising four top-notch human beings. Keeping on top of home repairs better than your much younger neighbors. Your prairie book, as was mentioned, the photo albums you assembled for your kids when each turned 50. Your qualities manifested in the way you cooked and ate, healthy food in modest portions with no waste. In the way you woke up early and went to water aerobics, even in the dead of winter, and drove a neighbor too. So generous were you with rides that your final collapse was in the lobby of the hospital to which you drove a friend to her oncology appointment. To your last conscious moment, you were helping others. I don't know how I'm going to get through the next election cycle without you. It's been tough to break the habit of calling you in the middle of the day to vent or mutually commiserate about the latest outrageous event out of Washington or the latest shocking headline. You gave me the gift of Sally, who is picking up some of the slack, but I still have political conversations with you in my mind, Ruth. Most excellent human, there is a gaping hole just your size in my heart. I'll miss your stories about Grand Rapids, explanations of the provenance of your Christmas tree ornaments, your holiday cookies and Danish cucumber salad, your open-mindedness, especially in the Cold War era, New Year's Eve parties at my grandparents' house in the 80s and 90s with George and the Stolls and Podells, Thanksgivings at your house with my mom and Maya and Ginny and Tom, playing hide the thimble with the little ones, the tender way you stroked my cats who gravitated to your lap, the colorful way you coordinated your accessories with your clothing and were always put together, the way you ran downstairs, down the stairs to open the front door, your hugs. Lovely Ruth, I will never be able to thank or repay you, so the best I can do is try to follow your example of just plain doing the right thing, keeping your mind sharp, being disciplined, being kind, dancing and driving and raking leaves and shoveling snow in your 90s. Source of light and warmth, you will live on in me and so many others. I love you forever.
She just about said it all. Ruth would sit at a table, a round table, always next to Sally Jameson and a group including Helen Bukalik, Alice Lowe, different women who were very, very astute and attuned to the political scene and outraged most of the time. She dressed artistically, and when I got dressed tonight, I said, I want to make her proud, so I wore my special scarf. She always looked beautiful. She looked like a piece of art. I'm not going to talk about what everyone else has already touched upon, but I'm going to tell you some things that she told me because she's in a book that I wrote. And I interviewed a lot of the people who go to the L'Chaim lunch program. She told me that she used to share a bed with her grandmother, and that before she'd go to bed, her grandmother would say, "Remember, Ruth, don't go to sleep with your wrath." She also said, Remember where you come from every time you've left the house. She sat next to Jonas Salk's younger brother in college. He introduced her to George. And when she married him, her mother said, "Well, I guess since we named you Ruth, you were bound to marry a Jewish man." She was just an incredible person. And we're talking about all the things she did in groups and through music. But there was something also about her sitting next to you and listening with her whole heart. She was somebody who could do the group thing, but she could also be there for you and listen. And I think you said that very well. She gave you the attention and the respect that a story deserves. So we loved her so much. I'm sorry she's not with us anymore.
My name is Randy Converse. I'm a fellow member of Prairie Unitarian along with Ruth. As we said today, she was a very special person and she had a lot of very special qualities. And one that I want to accentuate, that had been alluded to, but I want to accentuate a little bit. Ruth had the uncanny ability to disagree with people, but with style and grace and dignity. And she'll always set that example for me, and I want to thank Ruth very much for that.
Just don't worry, I won't speak in Tibetan. Well, my name is Tenzin Trinley. I am Ruth's neighbor directly across the street. And I had the privilege and the pride of knowing Ruth. Out of estimated 6 million Tibetans, I'm very proud to call myself a friend Ruth. At her birthday, 90th birthday, I remarked that Ruth was the most active and energetic kid on the block. But more importantly, she was one of the kindest and most gentle person I've ever met. So in that regard, I'm forever very grateful to have known Ruth. And we have unfinished business between Ruth and I. Inspired by her love of music and talent at that age, age of 90, I became very excited to learn a piece of musical instrument. So the natural thing was to think of Ruth. Ruth, can you give me a lesson in playing a recording? She said, "Well, we'll see, we'll talk about that." So it never happened. So wherever you are, Ruth, you better incarnate fast. I'm waiting. And with that note, Ruth, wherever you are, I will always love you, and I will always remember your kindness, which is the best human quality that anybody can have. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Nevena Smith. I'm here to speak on behalf of my mother, Rose, who couldn't be here. She is exactly the same age as Ruth. She's 92 right now, but certainly not as active as Ruth was. And Ruth and George and my mother and Galen, her husband, shared an anniversary. And so while they were all alive, they would have anniversary dinners together. And it was a wonderful tradition. And then after George passed, Ruth was always included in our family for anniversary dinners. And then after my father passed, we continued the tradition until my mother wasn't capable of going out to dinner anymore. And my mom isn't really capable of leaving the house very much. So Ruth has been wonderful at coming in and sitting with her and visiting her. And she would come in when I had to go run errands. She would come in and sit with my mom, which was a wonderful thing. And she was able to do that just a few weeks before she left us. And my mother considered her her best friend and was absolutely proud as punch when she was invited into the book group. And I know she missed it when she couldn't concentrate on the books long enough to really contribute to the book club anymore, and when she wasn't able to get up the stairs. So she missed that. But Ruth was always giving herself to someone else, you know, visiting, giving rides, doing all the wonderful things that a friend does, and to so many of us. And I know that my mother would love to be here, and Mrs. Ruth with all her heart. Thank you.
I'm Gary Gates, and I'm a member of Prairie. But my life first intersected with Ruth's in 1984 when I married Pam. I didn't know it at the time, because Pam made the arrangements for the music at our wedding. But there was an ethnic connection, and we did some folk dancing, because we were performing folk dance group at the time, and enjoyed it thoroughly. But I still didn't, I was sort of a cloud nine, not pay attention to anybody else around me, so I never got to know Ruth at that time. I was, when I first joined Prairie about 7, 8 years ago, it was the day they announced that Dolita had died. And I was still out of it. I didn't know anything about the ethnic connection, except that Pam took care of the music. But when Pam heard about Dolita, she said, oh, and she said they played at our wedding. And after that, every time I saw Ruth, I thought about that. She provided the music for our wedding. It was just a nice recollection of when we got married. And so I felt very good about that with Ruth. She just was part of my history that I didn't know about. And the last several years at the Prairie service auction, I've offered labor in the yard or wherever you wanted me to work. And she always bought it. And I'd go over there and clean up her yard and move plants and work whatever. And then she'd invite me in for cider and cookies or some kind of dessert. And I got to know her best that way, because I knew who she was, but except for that time she working with her on her house, I wouldn't really have gotten to know her very well. The thing that really struck me about her was in the last years, she knew she was going blind. She talked about it, and it never seemed to bother her. If I'd been going blind, I think I wouldn't have bothered. But, yeah, that was happening. That was the way it was. And so I really was impressed with how calm, cool, and accepting Ruth Rose was of what life brought. Thank you.
I know that all of us here have come together because we have very fond memories of Ruth, and I hope that you'll all share and comfort each other after the service. I expect to hear laughter and music as we talk about the special bonds that we had with Ruth. I'm going to light one last candle, as we do in the Prairie tradition, for the memories and love that are left unspoken.
I would like to share that she would tell us when she was in kindergarten, in the room they had a rocking horse, and her kindergarten goal was to ride that rocking horse. But the more pushy kids dominated the rocking horse, and the whole year went by and she never was able to ride the rocking horse. So at the end of the year, she went up to her teacher and explained the situation, and the teacher said, "Oh, Ruthie, I didn't know that. Ride the rocking horse as long as you like." And so my mom said she rode the rocking horse for like 20 minutes or half hour. And I just love that story because it's so typical of my mom's view on life about hope and joy and toppling injustice.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us in celebrating the colorful and rich life that Ruth led. So please join us now for an informal dinner in the Gabler Room to continue remembering Ruth and connecting with each other.